If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, in our continuing coverage of the events that are going on at MetroCon, the IEEE conference sponsored by Lockheed Martin, and this year also sponsored by IBM, we are real lucky we have with us Stephen Hollis. He's currently the manager of Watson IoT Engineering Marketing Team, and he's focusing on engineering, lifecycle management, and systems engineering portfolio. He's got quite a background in data analytics from IoT and SCADA, that, of course, is supervisory control and data acquisition, and process control systems. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Well, thank you, Colonel, and thank you for having me and speaking with me today.
Well, I'm interested in all the things that are going on with IBM. We've had numerous speakers from IBM over the years, and I was hoping maybe you could bring us up to date on where you are with marketing Watson IoT and everything about it.
Sure. Well, we're at a real exciting point with the whole engineering lifecycle management portfolio. In, of course, Watson IoT, what we've done and what's been happening is this transformation. As we all know, engineering is getting more and more complex. It's getting more, having to deal with more and more different attributes that up until not too long ago were not really part of the ecosystem or the environment of a particular product. with the whole advent or the appreciation of IoT, what has occurred is now not only is data coming in from outside sources, but the product itself is now producing its own data that then is used from within the product and correlated and working with that data that's coming from outside the product. So in order to deal with that from an engineering perspective and how to design around that, is you need those products that are going to enable the design engineer, the systems engineer, or the people that are involved with the development process to then be able to think about and design the requirements around those different kinds of data inputs as well as the product itself. And then in addition to that, a lot of these products are now dealing with a lot of many of the inputs and outputs that go along with the safety of the product, and how the product deals with the public, and how it deals with people and the operator, and the experience that that person dealing with the product is going to have. So within that engineering lifecycle has to include and comprehend things like testability and traceability as it comes to various standards that are now becoming a requirement instead of a nice-to-have, such as ASPICE or such as ISO 26262. So considering all these dimensions now that are becoming front and center as it relates to a product, the tools and the solutions that you need to design these products and work within these compliance constraints as well as safety constraints is becoming paramount. And that's where the engineering lifecycle management portfolio comes in. We have a complete end-to-end lifecycle management and one of the only totally integrated platforms that not only deals with requirements creation as well as testability and manageability and compliance and traceability, but then it also includes collaboration and process and task management. So in one fell swoop, you can have your entire product development lifecycle and then, of course, the continuing testing and evaluation and modification of that in one product suite.
Wow. You're into a whole bunch of stuff. And, of course, you mentioned safety, and that's a really big thing right at the moment. As I just had breakfast with a guy this morning, a retired police officer, and he says, the world's getting pretty complicated. He said, we got to worry about safety all the time. Is it now self-driving cars coming in and then these drones that are flying over? And he said it's a big worry to a lot of people. And then, of course, with Boeing's 737 The sensors purposely crashing the airplanes. So I guess safety is a major part of what you're up to, right?
Well, safety is now becoming a dimension on so many fronts. I mean, if you look at just where these autonomous vehicles are going and how they're interacting with the public and how they're interacting with their whole environment and how safe that needs to be. And then you're also looking at not only autonomous vehicles, but then the autonomous systems that are inside of a lot of the vehicles, a lot of the things we operate today, such as self-braking systems that are becoming more and more predominant and prevalent in our vehicles, as well as backup systems, as well as lane departure and lane awareness systems. Each one of these not only is good from a safety perspective, but also then has to be tested for safety. So when these type of systems begin to activate unexpectedly, or they begin to intrude where they weren't expected, these are combinations and permutations of testing and operability that have to be accounted for, and this all contributes to the safety message. And as part of the IBM ELM portfolio, what we have is that testability and traceability component that relates back to those requirements that were created for these types of systems. So you have a single thread or a single line where these kinds of systems with the requirements that are contained within are now have that direct line of traceability and that direct line of testability that enables this safety component to be very well understood and at the same time contribute to a compliance factor such as the ASPICE standard or the ISO 26262 standard.
Well, we know that sensors do go bad, and sometimes it's built into the engineering and the design of them, and sometimes it's just a matter of failure of use. And to be able to fail safe has got to be a tremendous challenge with all the things that we're facing nowadays. And I'm gratified to hear that IBM is on the cutting edge of that. You've got a background in SCADA, the supervisory control and data acquisition. We remember a few years ago in Iran when their nuclear program broke down badly because their SCADA was sabotaged somehow. Is there an increasing demand to make SCADA safe?
Well, the demand on SCADA is one that's amazing because with that that type of term and what SCADA represents has many, many, many dimensions that then goes into our everyday lives. So all of the process control that is associated with power generation, that's associated with water purification, water distribution, any type of process, even when it's non-customer directly touching the customer, such as a water treatment plant or a water distribution system, but even a manufacturing system where you have a lot of process control components that are controlling the manufacturing line or the production line. These things have to have a level of safety, cyber protection, one that is very, very strong and powerful from the standpoint of, you know, if somebody can come in and they are, you know, it's a rogue attack or a hack attack. These kinds of things can affect large communities of people. So it's imperative that these systems be able to be, you know, locked down and highly secure just from the type of access that they have into these various systems in order to, you know, they were put in place in order to make these manufacturing lines and operations, you know, more efficient and enable you to, you know, see the data, see how the process is going, see the types of ways that they can be improved. Of course, at the same time, with all systems that have you know, that are interconnected and, of course, have internet, internet access. Those are ones that then can lead to vulnerabilities, and that's why those kinds of systems, you know, really need to be secure and have the proper security wrapped around them.
Yeah, I guess it, so. Internet access is still almost like the early days of the automobile. You know, almost like the Wild West. It's becoming more reliable all the time, and of course there's constant demands for its use. And you're head of the, you know, you're manager of the marketing team for Watson IoT. I imagine there's a great deal of demand on you and your team to try to satisfy all the all the firms and the organizations, the governments, and those sorts of things that that need your solutions.
We have a great customer base of exactly that, Colonel, where our solution is so pervasive and is able to deal with all these kinds of markets, whether it be automotive, aerospace, and defense. Electronics, you know, of all various. Devices to scanners. The power of the engineering lifecycle management portfolio is just that. It has the capability of, right from design and conception, capturing those requirements regardless of the environment, because it has the level of depth to comprehend the various levels of complexity regardless of the industry and regardless of what that particular product is. So it can scale, you know, across the product or products if there's a series of them. It comprehends and has the ability to then contribute to concepts such as model-based systems engineering and digital twin, so that then this data doesn't have to be replicated, it doesn't have to be duplicated. You have a really single source of truth when it comes to where the requirements and the design of the system are. And then because of the integration of the portfolio, that single source of truth from a requirement standpoint can be leveraged throughout the portfolio. And then, as I was mentioning before, the level of task management, process management, and then collaboration that are built in the portfolio allow this on a worldwide scale.
Well, the future is coming at us pretty rapidly. Do you you feel you're going to be able to keep up with the demand and the changes and the things that are happening? And what do you see coming at us the next 5 years or 10?
Well, we have a strong legacy of being able to deal with complex products and complex solutions. And our solutions have been progressing with the products or in front of the products as they've progressed, So we've always been cognizant of that, as well as the customers that we've worked with and the complexity of their products. So we've worked hand in hand with them as their products have gotten more complex. Our products have evolved to deal with that level of complexity. What's coming is just this continued evolution of the different dimensions that are going to be incorporated as far as where our products are extended and the levels or types of not only data, but environments that they have to deal with. So as more and more data becomes available in our environment, then these products can take advantage of more and more of that data that's available to them to make the user experience better, to make the operation of the product better, and then, of course, to give information back to the design community of that product that enables them to then enhance the product better and faster. So where I see this, and by this I mean our whole environment going, is just the ability to comprehend and understand and use all of these different data dimensions, expanding products that will use that data both externally, you know, data that's externally available as well as internally available, to then enhance the product and enhance the user experience. So these systems now are going to then continue to rise or escalate, so that they're going to be more and more interconnected. And then the ability for a design portfolio such as the ELM to be able to handle that ever-increasing number of connections, complexity, interconnectivity is what's going to be important to help designers and systems engineers and engineers design products and not be limited to by the tool that they're working in, so that they're freed up to really have, you know, a free expression of thinking and be able to comprehend all of the different dimensions of where their product can live, and then how their product is going to enhance that environment and that user experience.
Well, Stephen, I'm wondering about some of the biggest challenges that you're facing. Is it interconnectivity, or is it medical, or is it transportation, or is it defense, or where do you see the biggest challenges that you're going to have to work on in the future?
Well, some of the biggest challenges are across all of those industries, Colonel, that you mentioned. You know, and it all stems back to data, how that data is used, and how that data can be beneficial to those particular industries or environments. You know, if you look at the medical device industry, now those types of things have all kinds of access to data. Their sensors are better, so therefore they're getting more accurate and more in-depth information that can be then used by the product, such as a pacemaker or an insulin pump. You look at, and you know, to case in point, operating the environment, you know, if you look at pacemakers of not too long ago, you had to have a special adapter that then had to hook up to a phone. Well, now you can take that and use your smartphone and hold your smartphone up to your chest, and that then reads what's up with your pacemaker and transmits that directly to the medical person or facility for instantaneous or near real-time assessment of how that pacemaker is doing, how the patient is doing. You know, that's just one example. Same thing with an insulin pump. We've seen them so far in advance to the point of now you don't, you can have a blood glucose measurement system that works with your smartphone. So you don't even need a separate device to do that. You know, you transition. I think the hot topic, or the one that is most familiar and has the most visibility to the public eye, is something, you know, like our vehicle. And all of the various components that are now getting just more and more complex by the day. You know, it began with GPS. Now our cars are Wi-Fi hotspots. And, you know, they have all the systems that we talked about previously. They have these self-braking systems. They have cruise control. They have autonomous driving, and then, you know, segue into where autonomous vehicles are. So that's just the next step. And with each one of those, you have a level of complexity. And, of course, from a safety perspective, not only standards compliance, but then you have just the permutations and combinations of the testing that needs to take place to make sure that these vehicles operate in a predictable and expected way as they were designed, and then can, of course, at the same time incorporate the changes that are required as these systems operate in their environment. And, you know, same is true. I could give a lot of examples. You know, same is true for the aviation industry, where you have just more and more complex, more fly-by-wire, more types of systems that are more electrical software dependent than mechanically dependent, which then, of course, adds a almost exponential level of complexity. And when you deal, and when anything deals with the public or humans, then, of course, there's more and more safety and types of testing that needs to ensure of that safety of the public. So, yeah, there are just a lot of dimensions. And then, you know, if you think about complexity from a societal standpoint of how all of these things, whether it's a, you know, a plane or a car, or, you know, a medical device or, you know, really anything, has to all interoperate together, to get a lot of advantage. You know, we're now seeing all of, you know, we're now seeing smart clothing with biomedical devices or biomonitoring devices that are built in. So now this is another, you know, level of data that you now just get heading from things that you wear. So, you know, that plays into then your biometric as it relates to something like a smartwatch. And how is that going to be used and recorded and improve your health and tell you things about yourself that can, you know, foster improvement? So that's where we see that level of complexity starting to go. And at the same time, you have to be able to comprehend all those requirements, capture all those requirements, test against all those requirements, demonstrate that these products are safe. And it's the IBM Engineering Lifecycle Management portfolio that has the capability, extensibility, and can scale to accommodate those kinds of systems.
Oh, yeah, fascinating. And you mentioned the vehicles. I got a little side story there. We got to be careful not to outsmart ourselves. But my son has a new truck that when he pulls up to a stoplight, it shuts down. And then when he gives it the gas, it starts back up again. And so it just turns off. And I understand that there's more of this coming, but I was reminded this past weekend when I was out with my girlfriend and we had pulled in for a hamburger at the local drive-in restaurant, and her battery went dead. And we had to call AAA to come out and give us a jump. Which they did. Well, then we didn't know if it was the alternator or the battery or a bad or whatever it was. All we knew was we wanted to get home so that she could get in the following day to get it checked out, because by then it was dark and it was night and that sort of thing. If we were concerned, because if we would have had a vehicle that shut itself off and the battery's bad, there wouldn't be any juice to make to start the vehicle up again. So these are ways that we get so smart that we almost outsmart ourselves. So I had to tell you that little story.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting. There was a story in yesterday's, or let's see, what's today, Thursday, in Tuesday's Wall Street Journal about all of this self-braking kind of technology now that are built into cars.
Yeah.
And, you know, this being, you know, just between me and you, off the record, if you will. But same thing where these systems are now not behaving properly. You know, they're stopping, like they had a case where the car just stopped and they were on the freeway, on the expressway. And so, you know, it's getting into this notion of you have to think about what are the conditions or what are those real extreme cases where, like to your point, well, what if it didn't start again? Or what if the brakes are applied? Or what if it suddenly accelerates? You know, or you know, those or. So, yeah, that's the thing that's going to make the whole testing and that kind of thing extremely important.
Yeah, I remember a number of years ago, and you're too young to know this, but back in the early days of the automobile, the Fords were known as Tin Lizzies, and it was said that you could keep them going with baling wire. So, they're always going. And you mentioned a minute ago, off the record. Now, you know, I'm a reporter, and when somebody says off the record, that means I got to cut it out. But you didn't say anything that you wouldn't want to have public, right, on the record.
No, that was fine. It was just I didn't know how germane it was to what you would use in your story. So I just, you know, didn't want to, because I can chat about cars for a long time because I'm a car guy. So, you know, I didn't want to pontificate about how it is. But it was in the journal, and I thought it was fascinating because you have major manufacturers that are, you know, have built cars for a long time that are now struggling with this level of complexity because they're not just a simple hydraulic braking system or even an electric braking system, which are starting to come into play now. It's this, it's all of this, you know, autonomous, semi-autonomous, you know, radar that now affects the braking and the drivability. So it's just many, many dimensions that I don't think manufacturers, or product folks were used to having to test against or figure out how they would properly work in an everyday environment. So that's the level of complexity that we're facing.
Yeah, well, that's fun, Stephen, that you're a car nut. And this my son's truck also doesn't have a steering column. It's an electronic device that steers the wheel. I don't think I'd like something like that. Mechanics don't fail suddenly, but electronics do. So,
and it's so true, because it's that notion where it's just amazing, right? Because all of this electromechanical stuff is now starting to go away. So, you know, your brakes are hydraulic. Now that's going to start to go away. I know the new Corvette, the 2020 Corvette, has electronic brakes or electric brakes. So there's no fluid, right? So, you know, the acceleration now, there's no, that happened a while back. You know, your accelerator is now not directly connected to your throttle body or your fuel injection is now electronic. You know, and this just continues to evolve. You know, now soon, to your point, they'll have electronic steering. I know that's happening on the new Corvette as well. So, you know, what happens when these things fail, and how to test, and what is the driver going to be able to do or not do, as it relates to things that aren't mechanical anymore?
Yeah, fascinating subject.
The car, right?
Yeah, right, absolutely. Well, before we get out of here, I got a question for you. I know that you've been mentored by people that you've admired when you were in college and probably at high school, and maybe your parents or something. And then as you get older, you're now a manager of the marketing team, so you have to do a lot of mentoring. Is there a creed to live by, a certain word of wisdom or something that you could leave us with today before we say goodbye?
I think the one thing that strikes me in where we are in this particular point in time is flexibility. Things are so adaptable and changeable that you really have to be flexible in what you're thinking about, what you're doing, what you're designing, because a lot of the platitudes or standards or foundations that were once considered untouchable are now in play. So you have to have that level of flexibility tempered against some reality, but that level of flexibility to deal with all of the different dimensions that are changing in our environment.
All right, Stephen. Very good stuff. Thank you so much. For those who've just tuned in, Stephen Hollis is the manager of the Watson IoT Engineering Marketing Team. He focuses on engineering, lifecycle management, and systems engineering portfolios. IBM is a sponsor of this year's Metricon Conference, also sponsored by Lockheed Martin. This is the 32nd year. You won't want to miss it. It's going to be at the Hearst Convention Center November 6th. And that's about halfway between Dallas and Fort Worth. And we'll look forward to seeing you there. Hollis, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Colonel. I really appreciated your time and the opportunity to speak with you and the Metricon audience.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz.